What do one of the world's top food cities, a nationally celebrated zoo and science museum, and a Condé Nast Traveler Top 10 Best Big City in the Country have in common? Yes, it's Columbus. This isn't just a stop on the map. It's where award-winning flavors, unforgettable family moments, and big city buzz come together. Let's be honest, Columbus is turning heads. For top-of-the-line discoveries in your own backyard, visit experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Willie and D. Mace on ESPN 102.5, 106.3. The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick once again. Today, Derek Mason, Nick Frazier, we're all here in the confines of our air-conditioned studios. Thank you, Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Yesterday, we were out at Titans-Seahawks joint practices at St. Thomas Sports Park. Chase and Big Joe were just out there. Practices underway at St. Thomas Sports Park. It was a fascinating first day of joint practice. A lot happened on the field. It was cool to be able to watch it and broadcast at the same time. It was a bit challenging, too, because you're trying to watch what's going on the field while also making sure that we entertain you, our lovely listeners. But I feel like we juggled that pretty well, Derek.
Yeah, I think we did. It was hot as fish grease out there.
And it's even hotter today.
It's even hotter. So fish grease mixed with some whatever kind of grease you want to add into that. But it is hot today. So I commend Big Joe and Chase for being out there today. They didn't get the brunt of the heat. We would have got the brunt of the heat. And we would have been doing half of it by ourselves, like nobody out on the field. So
yeah, by the time practice ended yesterday, in the final hour of our show, practice was over, news conferences had been held, and it was just us out there. Fans had left. It was just us and the grounds crew at St. Thomas Sports Park. It was serene, but also a little bit weird to just be the two remaining people left at St. Thomas Sports Park. But yes, by the time I got back into my car after the show, you could have cooked an egg on my dashboard. I had to crank that AC all the way to max. But it was an interesting day out there yesterday. And as updates come in from those who are at practice, we will bring them to you. Of course, there are certain aspects of practice that can be reported on in live time. There are aspects of practice that cannot be reported on in live time. So we won't get the majority of the updates until after practice concludes shortly after noon. We'll also go live to Tennessee Titans coach Brian Callahan's post-practice news conference. We will carry that live in the noon hour. But the big story coming out of Titans training camp practice, joint practice with the Seahawks yesterday, was the connection, or I guess yesterday, lack thereof, between Will Levis and Calvin Ridley. And I'm reading a story from Nick Suss in the Tennessean talking about their lack of cohesiveness yesterday, meaning Levis and Ridley. And Suss writes, on the two plays that mattered most, the two go-route balls Levis heaved in Ridley's direction, Ridley beat Reek Woolen both times twice. Ridley, or both deep both times, I should say. Ridley got open. Still, both of the passes felt incomplete. On the first one, Ridley flipped his shoulders twice, tracking the ball in the air, never seeming to figure out how to take advantage of his inside leverage and get to a football that landed just inches from his fingers. The second one was a little more straightforward. Levis says he overthrew it, but Ridley still seemed to be in range of the ball. Now, both Ridley and Levis said after practice that it's a work in progress developing that chemistry. We are still a few weeks away from the start of the regular season, so I don't think there's any reason for concern at this moment. But when you consider how much money the Titans shelled out to Calvin Ridley in free agency to bring him here to be another number one option alongside DeAndre Hopkins for Will Levis, it's important that they develop that chemistry quickly. So, Derek, based off of what you were able to see at practice yesterday, what I just read from Nick Suss in the Tennessean and what you might have heard Levis and Ridley say after practice about, you know, the lack of cohesion between them yesterday, what are your thoughts on that developing relationship? And does there come a point before the start of the regular season when you should be concerned if they are unable to click?
Well, I mean, I'm not too concerned at this moment, you know, because we saw them connect in a game, albeit it was once on a short pass and whatnot, but Ridley was able to get some yardage after that. But we saw them connect a bit. It's going to be a work in progress. That's just the way it is. And that's why I was so adamant about the whole D-Hop not being on the field because of his injury. And all I kept hearing back was, oh, he'll be fine, he'll be fine. He will not be fine. That offense is a whole new offense, and you're trying to build that rapport with all of your receivers. It's not just one guy you're trying to build it with. You're trying to build it with all your receivers. And the time you're not on the field could be the time that y'all are honing in on your skills, whether it be, you know, during the periods or on the side when, you know, maybe the special teams unit is going, y'all are on another field and y'all are going over routes after routes after routes and the timing of the routes. Y'all are not going full speed a lot of times. It's just a walkthrough, but you're getting sort of a glimpse of how the quarterback wants that route ran or what the receiver is looking at in regards to defense and making sure you both see it the same way. So D-Hop not being there, I think it's going to be a big loss early on, I think, because they're going to try to build that rapport in the new offense once he gets back. And then the Calvin Ridley thing, I think if they're not on the same page soon here, that the passing game is not going to be able to flourish the way it needs to. Passing games flourish, why? Because you've built a rapport with your receivers and your running backs. The offensive line knows the quarterback. Quarterback knows the offensive line. The offensive line knows where the quarterback likes to step, so they like to, you know, secure their blocks in certain areas or whatnot. But it's like they have eyes behind their head, so they get a feel of where the quarterback is at each and every time. That comes with repetition. The same thing with a wide receiver. Repetition, once you get that repetition down and ready to go, you become a better offense. You become a better passing game. So I'm not necessarily overly worried right now, but once we get into the season and if they're still having these problems, yes, I'm going to be worried because that tells me that these two guys are not on the same page. And that goes for whether it's he and Calvin Ridley, meaning Will Levis, or Levis in DeAndre Hopkins, because the other guys are out there with the exception of Tyler Boyd. He missed yesterday's practice, but the other guys are out there, you know, Treylon Burks, Kenzie, NWI, those guys are out there. So he's building this rapport with those guys, but it's great to build the rapport with those guys because you're going to need it, but those are not the guys that are going to be on the front line. Those are not your starting guys. You need to build that rapport with your starting guys, and I think they're building it a little bit with Ridley. It's just the deep ball. The deep ball takes a little time to build because you can't quite – when you have a new guy come in, you heard about his speed, but you never thrown to his speed. So once you need to get a couple of more – you know, practices and game type situations where you can really judge his speed and how I throw the football down the field, because those were two passes that I think ultimately will be completed passes. But right now, they don't have that rapport that they need on the deep pass. Short passes, yes, but on the deep passes, they don't have it just yet.
So yesterday, I believe it was, on Robbie and Rex Road, Paul Kaharski sitting in for Joe yesterday, they had Michael DeRocco, who is the ESPN Nation Jacksonville Jaguars reporter. and they talked about Calvin Ridley. And I thought DeRocco's answer was really interesting. This was Michael DeRocco, ESPN Jaguars reporter, on Calvin Ridley yesterday on Robbie and Rex Road.
What are the Titans getting?
Calvin Ridley didn't know where he was supposed to be all of the time and wasn't 100% sure of some of those checks all of the time, and missed some for sure, missed some adjustments, and still ended up with 1,000 yards. So what they're doing is they're getting a guy that if he can, once he finally feels comfortable in the offense, I mean, he's a 1,200, 1,300-yard receiver without question. I mean, he's still got the same skills he had when he was down there in Atlanta. I mean, during camp last year, he was the best player on the field here in Jacksonville. So I expect him to kind of continue. Now, it just sort of depends on how quickly he feels comfortable in the offense, how quickly he picks it all up, and he develops that chemistry with Levis. But, you know, they've got a game breaker there who can turn games around as long as, you know, like I said, he's comfortable with everything he's doing. And that takes time with anybody. But with Calvin Ridley, it may take a little bit longer than maybe anticipated.
Derek, when you hear that from Michael DeRocco, ESPN Jaguars reporter, especially that first part where he was talking about maybe not always knowing where to be, if I'm summarizing that correctly, what is your reaction to hearing that?
Well, based upon, you know, last year and hearing DeRocco talk, he didn't quite understand the whole nuances of the offense in the passing game. Not to say that, I mean, he probably knew a lot of it, but then there were some things he just couldn't grasp. And, you know, but the thing I do like is, hey, listen, once this guy gets it, he's a player. But the caveat is him getting it. Some guys do have trouble, you know, picking up on offenses. Not to say they won't ultimately know it, but it takes them time. He's basically, in a span of 3 years, went through three different offenses. Mm-hmm. He was in Atlanta. He left Atlanta, missed a year. So you're talking about really 4 years. And then he goes to Jacksonville, and he learns their offense. And now he comes to Tennessee, and he has to learn a whole new offense. Now, that's a lot of damn offense in a matter of 3 to 4 years. He just has to, you know, find a way to and that's why I said him on the field is important. D-Hop on the field is important. Tyler Boyd on the field is important, because everybody's working from the same point, the starting point, because this is a new offense. And we can't afford, you know, to have guys that we're going to count on not a part of the offense as we try to grow into what we want to be. So, you know, Hop's not there. Boyd's not there. You have Calvin Ridley, and you're still not on the same page with Calvin Ridley. This offense can't be what it needs to be if two of the three are not practicing, and then the one that is practicing, you haven't quite built that rapport with. And this is why, you know, the new collective bargaining, it was great, but also it was bad, because it took away time from the players. We saw the offensive line, they suffered across the league. Across the league, they suffered because you don't get the time that you need to really teach these guys what they want, what they need to learn. And then secondly, the receiver and the quarterback, they've suffered some, because the time we had in practice, we may not have liked being there the times we were there, but it ultimately paid off once the season started, because we hit the ground running. We didn't have to, you know, play two or three games, and then now we built that rapport, and now we got that we're synchronized. No, we had all those months beforehand, and now once the season starts, now we can hit the ground running, meaning everybody knows the offense the way they should. Right now, that's not the case, because they don't have as much time, and then guys getting injured and everything else. So I hope he learns the offense very quickly. I'm not sure if this is a complex offense to learn or not. That's up for Brian Callahan and those guys. But if you have trouble learning an offense, you can't be the team that you want to be when everybody's hesitant, especially the receivers and the quarterback. If I take a three-step drop and I want you to run it out and you're hesitant, now is a sack. We all have to be on the same page. So I'm not too concerned with what he said. But on the other hand, hey, listen, if they don't get this thing figured out quickly or before the season starts with the injuries that they've had at the wide receiver position, this is not going to be good.
So I want to get inside your mind when you were playing. So correct me if I'm wrong here. You preceded Steve McNair in Baltimore by one season?
Yep, I got there, yep.
So let me see. I'm going to reach into the, you know, the dark, deep areas of my mind here. So your quarterback, your starting quarterback in Baltimore, the year you were there before Steve McNair would have been Kyle Bowler?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, when Kyle was the last time you heard that name?
It's been some years. I don't know what Kyle is doing at this point in time, but hey.
He went to Cal, right?
Went to Cal.
I know a lot more about Kyle Bowler than I should. But point being, so you had all of those years with Steve McNair, and then he joined you in Baltimore in your second season with the Ravens. But you go to Baltimore, you've got a new quarterback in Kyle Bowler. You had a good season that year, you personally and the team. But how long would you say it took you and Kyle Bowler to have that connection? How long did it take you to implement all of the things that you were just talking about with Ridley and Levis?
It took the offseason, really. But then we were just entering. No, we hadn't had the new collective bargaining yet. So we had a lot of time together, Kyle and I. The minute I signed, I was there. The minute the programs started, I was there, made sure I was there every day to make sure I got the on-the-field work that I needed with the quarterback. And I had no problems. I went through four or five offenses, I believe. I think two here in Nashville, two in Baltimore, one in with the Jets, and one in Houston. I had no problem with picking up offenses. It was just one of those innate abilities that I had to look at a playbook and, you know, look at it on the screen, go outside, and then be able to implement what I saw on the film and implement it on the field. So I had no trouble picking up offenses. But I've seen guys that did have trouble. And it slows everything down when everybody's not on the same page. So I wanted to make sure that when I put on that helmet and we stepped on the field as a team, I wanted to make sure I did my part. And my part was to make sure that I made the quarterback job easy. And how do you do that? One, obviously, you be available, you catch the football. But more than that, knowing what's going on. Now, I'm not going to say I didn't mess up a few times. That happens. I mean, you get brain fog and you go out there and you end up running a route you shouldn't have been running. That did happen. But more times than not, he and I were on the same page. Why? Because we had time in the bucket already. We had a bunch of time in the bucket. Time on task. I always talk about that. Time on task. It's critical in today's game because of the advent of this whole new era of passing. Now it's no longer I turn around and hand the ball off. No, I'm throwing the ball, so I need everybody to be on the same page. And you know, if you can't learn the offense the way you need to learn it, I'm not saying that Calvin Ridley can't. I'm just saying, based upon what was said, if you do have trouble picking up the offense, it does slow everything down. But the minute you get it, now Calvin Ridley can play more like the Calvin Ridley that he was in Atlanta when he had 1,300 yards, 8 or 9 touchdowns, averaging over 13, 14 yards a catch. And I looked at him like, man, the Titans need to go get him because he's suspended. Go get him now when it's cheap. They chose not to. They had to pay a big contract to ultimately get him. But once you get that Calvin Ridley, this offense is going to take off.
I should correct myself. You had a good season. The Ravens did not.
Yeah, we didn't have a good season that first year. That's why they went out and got Steve McNair.
Yes, you had 86 receptions for 1,073 yards and 3 touchdowns. The Ravens were 6-10. So
you had a good season. Yeah.
The Ravens did not. And then, of course, Steve joined you in Baltimore the following year. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Before we head to break, some breaking news, more injury news for, not the Titans, for the Buffalo Bills, according to Adam Schefter. Bills Pro Bowl linebacker Matt Milano, who left Tuesday's practice injured, tore his bicep and will now be out indefinitely. Milano will undergo surgery on his torn bicep with the hope of trying to return later this season, possibly in December. Schefter continues, this marks the second straight year that Milano has suffered a significant injury. Last season, he fractured his leg in week 5 versus the Jaguars and missed the rest of the season. So just an astonishing amount of significant injuries occurring around the NFL in training camp. We mentioned yesterday, J.J. McCarthy underwent knee surgery, Vikings rookie quarterback. He is out for the season. So far, knock on wood, nothing like that for the Tennessee Titans. But another major player, Bills Pro Bowl linebacker Matt Milano, torn bicep. Torn bicep and will be out possibly into December. 615-737-1025. We encourage your participation. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donig today. Derek Mason, ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game.
You mentioned a moment ago just continuing to work with Calvin on that chemistry deep. But do you like how you guys have been able to communicate in that process? Maybe right after the rep in the film study? Like, how is maybe the back from a verbal standpoint going as you guys work to get that?
Yeah, no, it's going well. I mean, instilling confidence in each other, you know, being honest with each other when it's, you know, if we know it's something that was on one of us or the other, and trying to be better for each other. And then also having coach, you know, all of our coaches, but especially Coach Callahan involved with it, to making sure that we know the timing and intent of the play and kind of how we see it married up with the footwork and with his route. So he's done a good job of keeping us on time and making sure that we know and expect, or I expect, where he's going to be, and he knows where the ball is going to be. So we just got to keep working it, like I said, and I know that's going to be a big part of our offense.
That was Will Levis, Titans starting quarterback, after practice yesterday with the Seattle Seahawks. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donig today. Derek Mason here with you on Willie and D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. During the break, we have an update from practice that I thought was very interesting from Michael Sean. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Michael Sean Duger, who covers the Seattle Seahawks for The Athletic. Quote, veteran restraint. Leonard Williams got tangled up with J.C. Latham, was crouched over him, and reached back to throw a punch, but held up. They had to be separated still, but that could have gotten bad if Leo let it go. So we were talking yesterday about how there were no fights at practice. There was some pushing and shoving, and I feel like there was one play that happened in front of us. I did not see the hit itself, but I did see Tajay Spears with his helmet off.
Yeah, it was the safety. What's the safety's name? Goodness, I can't get his name right now. He came up and made a good hit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Spears was expecting it.
Did his helmet pop off as a result? Yeah.
I mean, he didn't fall on the ground or anything,
but no.
His helmet came off. But it was a good, solid hit. I don't think anyone was expecting it. And you got a lot of ooh.
Yes. And a meeting of the minds between the Seahawks and the Titans. They just kind of came together, said some things that are not able to be said on a family station such as this. But nothing bad. You know, no fights or anything like that. But according to a reporter out at camp who covers the Seahawks, it almost went down between Leonard Williams and J.C. Latham. And we talked about Leonard Williams yesterday. He was the first player that I saw on the field yesterday where my eyes sort of bulged out. I was like, wow, that is a large person, Leonard Williams. 6'5", 6'4", 310 pounds. J.C. Latham is no child out there. So that would have been a heavyweight bout had those two.
Super heavyweight.
Yeah, super heavyweight bout come to blows. The irresistible force meeting the immovable object, if that were to have happened. But it looks like cooler heads prevailed, which is good. So we were talking about potential pass rushers on the move earlier this week. And one trade went down yesterday. It was made official this morning. The Atlanta Falcons traded for Matthew Judon. The Atlanta Falcons acquired Matthew Judon from the New England Patriots for a 2025 third round pick. What's interesting about this trade was, I think part of the reason why the trade happened was because Judon and the Patriots could not come to terms on a new contract. Judon had been open about his frustration with the process. But according to ESPN, the Falcons and Judon have not hammered out a contract for 2025, but plan to work toward one before the start of the season. So Matthew Judon moves. I also saw that Carl Lawson signed with the Cowboys, the veteran pass rusher as well. So if the Titans were looking for pass rushing help before the start of the season, of course, with Arden Key unavailable. By the way, that suspension has yet to be officially announced, I believe, although it was reported by Paul Kaharsky a couple of weeks ago.
Neither one of them have.
Yeah, with Danico Autry. Yeah, that hasn't happened either. I'm wondering what the NFL is waiting for. But if the Titans are looking for pass rush help, one of the big names is off the board in Matthew Judon and Carl Lawson, who was a free agent. So I'm not sure who is left out there to help, but it appears that the Titans are probably going to go into the season with the pass rushers they have. And the question is, Derek, do they have enough to at least hold on until Arden Key returns, if I'm not mistaken, suspended 6 games? Mm-hmm. So we're not looking at Arden Key for a while. So do the Titans have enough up front in their pass rush to, you know, to get through the absence of Key for the first 6 games of the season?
Well, we hope they do. You know, that's why they went out and drafted Tavondre Sweat. He's not a big sack guy, but they're hoping that because he will command a double team, they believe, and because he can push the pocket back, he will allow other guys the ability to get to the passer. You know, we got Harold Landry is 2 years removed from the injury. We saw that he started to come back into form toward the latter part of the second half of the season. So that's encouraging that we will get a fully healthy, ready to go Harold Landry. And I'm hoping we can get the Harold Landry of 2 years ago and not last year, even though, yeah, again, he played really well the second half of the season. He was just getting used to that, you know, that surgically repaired knee that he had the prior year. So, but a lot of this does depend on, you know, the two big guys in the inside. How much, you know, double team do they command? When I see the two big guys inside, it's Jeffrey Simmons and Devondre Sweat, along with those guys that they rotate in there. Arden Key is going to have to step his game up this season. I think he's going to have to be more of an impact guy. Good player, but I'm not sure his impact was really felt last year. You hope that this year with a new defensive system that Denard Wilson has employed, that Arden Key will be more aggressive, that we have an opportunity to get to the passer more times than not. So, not having, you know, once he does come back, meaning Arden Key, you hope that he can pick up where Danico Autry left off. And, you know, maybe can. And then you look at Kenneth Murray, who was, you know, he was less than what they thought in with the Chargers. So hopefully he can is sort of a resurrection of his career, and he can come here and really play some good football. So it's yet to be seen. You know, how this defensive front, or can they make up for the loss of Arden Key for the first 6 games? We don't know just yet, but we just hope that with the aggressive nature of Denard Wilson, that he generates sacks some other way, whether it be from blitzing, you know, Adams or one of these other safeties, or, you know, getting Harold Landry on the edge one-on-one because of the two big fellas are commanding double teams. They're going to have to be creative in how they get their sacks this season, not having Arden Key for the first 6 games of the season. And a lot of these guys on this defense is especially the front, is new. So there's going to be, you know, design blitzes that they feel will get to the quarterback, either to disrupt him or to get a sack. So they will miss Danico Autry, and I think they will miss Arden Key some at the beginning. But I think ultimately they have figured this thing out. And I'm not saying they're going to lead the league in sacks, but I think they're going to get more sacks than what people anticipate.
I believe they had 45 total sacks as a team last mm-hmm. season, which puts them squarely in the middle
yeah.
of the league. So if they could improve there, obviously that would be fantastic. We do have some updates from practice from our old friend Braden Gall, tweeting about red zone drills. Titans offense had two touchdowns in red zone drills, according to Gall. Levis to Kinsey and Willis to Jaquan Jackson. Now, Jaquan Jackson was the standout of day one, I feel like. He was the practice player of the day, if we were going to give an award. He had, you know, I think he had a short pass that he took off with for a huge run that would have been a touchdown. And I was listening to Jared yesterday, and he was talking about, based off what we saw from Jaquan Jackson yesterday running with the twos and threes, based off of what he was able to do yesterday, should he get a run with the ones? And it is an interesting situation. You know, Treylon Burks, we saw the good and bad from Treylon Burks yesterday. The first thing I saw when I walked into practice was Treylon Burks burning Devin Witherspoon, who's no scrub, in a one-on-one drill on a deep route. And then practice ended with Treylon Burks attempting to catch a deep ball from Will Levis in the corner of the end zone, suffers a cramp, has to leave practice early. Good news, he is out at practice today. He is practicing, so the cramp obviously wasn't debilitating enough to keep him off the practice field. But we saw the sort of the good and bad of Treylon Burks yesterday in terms of why Titans fans seem so... He's a polarizing figure in the Titans fan base, Treylon Burks, because the talent is clearly there. But can he put it all together? But with Jaquan Jackson, now, I'm not expecting Jaquan Jackson to beat out Treylon Burks for a spot on this team. I do think Jaquan Jackson has certainly acquitted himself well so far in training camp and is putting himself in a good position to make the team. But from what you saw of Jaquan Jackson yesterday, do you think that Brian Callahan should reward him by giving him some playing time with Will Levis in that first unit?
I think you should. You know, Tyler Boyd, I'm not sure if he's practicing today, didn't practice yesterday. You got D-Hop out for an extended amount of time. So, you know, next man up. And this is an opportunity you have. You don't need to get ready. You need to be ready. And it seems Jackson, Jaquan Jackson, based upon, you know, yesterday's practice and how it's going early in practice today, that he's ready to take on whatever responsibility that the Titans offense is going to allow him to have. You know, you want to reward young guys because sometimes young guys get in and, you know, when they're amongst, you know, D-Hop and Calvin Ridley and Boyd, guys that have put in work in the NFL, you sort of get a little intimidated, or you feel like, man, I'm gonna never crack the starting lineup with those three guys here. But you go out there and you play your game, and you're doing well. That's when the coaches should notice and should reward you, especially in a situation like this when D-Hop is down, Boyd. I'm not sure if he's practicing today, didn't practice yesterday. So you want to elevate guys up. Treylon Burks, who got a lot of work yesterday, end up, you know, leaving practice as it, you know, maybe a period before it ended because he had leg cramps. So you want to take advantage of every opportunity you get. He's been doing well. You want to reward him, you know, elevate him a little bit, see how he handles that. And if he handles it well, then you elevate him a little bit more. This kid is someone that you really need to watch because he has something that the Titans desperately need. Speed and quickness. That's what he has, and he has it in abundance. You saw him catch a 5-yard slant and basically outrun everybody. I don't care if it was practice. Those guys were trying to catch him. They were running as if they didn't want him to get the touchdown. He showed the speed, he showed the acceleration, he showed the quickness. That is desperately needed on a Tennessee Titans offense in regards to those guys on the outside. They got good speed with Calvin Ridley, I think. They got good speed with Treylon Burks. But that inside guy, you know, they need that quickness and that speed. And if they can realize it early, that's only going to help the offense. So, yeah, I would say give him an opportunity. If he's doing well now, elevate him a little bit. Not to say he's going to be a starter, but at least while the starters are not practicing, allow him to play with the first quarterback to see how he does.
By the way, Jaquan Jackson ran a 4.42 40 at the NFL Draft Combine. So
fast.
We know he's quick. 615-737-1025, our phone and text line driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. We just have to get to this quickly. David in Arkansas on our text line wants to know, Derek, if you were able to secure Will Levis's clone.
I still wasn't able to secure it. It goes fast, man.
You have to be quick with
it.
As we've heard, David also texts, Rex Road said this morning he got to smell Will's yesterday and said it wasn't bad. Like, that phrasing is not great. He got to smell Will yesterday.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, Will Levis had a bottle of it, and I think after his news conference was letting reporters have a little spritz of it.
A little spritz of it on the wrist.
Yes, he said it smelled like a hotel lobby, is what we talked about yesterday. And as I said, it depends on what kind of hotel lobby we're talking about. If we're talking Four Seasons, we're talking, you know, something like that, then yes. If we're talking, you know, Spring Hill Suites, I've stayed in enough of those. That lobby doesn't smell too good, but. We anticipate Derek finally being able to get his hands on a bottle of Will Levis cologne, which has been a huge story. Like, if you just type Will Levis into Google, it's the number of sites, the number of different sites that have written about it. Food and Wine has written about it, according to Google. Not just the sports websites. I mean, even food magazines and such are writing about it. So it's a big story. Of course, you know, it matters what he does on the field.
Exactly.
I know that.
I just want the stories being written on the field.
We want the stories on the field, but it's given us plenty of entertainment this week. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, what is the floor and ceiling for this Titans team in terms of wins and losses? Someone who we trust very much on this station has his thoughts on the Titans' ceiling and floor. What do we think about that person's prognostication? We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick. Derek Mason, ESPN, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie and D. Mace, ESPN, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan, Derek Mason, Michael Jackson. Gonna let it play for a second. Always good to hear MJ.
Every Thursday. Right here.
Our Thursdays MJ days?
Yeah, from time to time.
Okay. I can dig it. Funny story, quickly. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, I was in Las Vegas. The Predators were playing the Golden Knights, so I was there to report on the game the night before. My parents came, my wife came with me, and the night before the game, we went to see the Michael Jackson Cirque du Soleil show. I think it was at the MGM Grand. And we went to a later show. It was started at like 9 or something. And I started nodding off a little bit. Not because the show wasn't good. It was. But, you know, I think we had flown in that day. So I was feeling a little tired with the time change and everything like that. So I nodded off. The next thing I know, I wake up and it's during the Thriller. The Thriller performance, and they have people dressed as zombies dancing in the crowd. So I wake up and there's a zombie within like 2 feet of my face, you know, doing the Thriller dance, and I jumped out of my seat. Not the way you want to wake up, but that's on me for dozing off during a Cirque du Soleil performance. Much worse could have happened. Anyway, before we get to what we teased at the break, I did see some interesting training camp updates from those on the ground at St. Thomas Sports Park. From Sam Phelan of A to Z Sports, Titans offense got on the field for a two-minute drill. Will Levis throws a pick on the very first play. Bad decision. Maybe 10 Seahawks defenders came over to the Titans sideline to chirp Jamal Adams afterwards. No love lost there. Then just 3 minutes later, at least according to the Twitter timeline, Chance Campbell intercepts Sam Howell over the middle in two-minute drills. Big answer for Tennessee after Levis's interception. So Levis throws a pick on his very first play of 2 minutes, but Chance Campbell gets it back against Sam Howell, who I forgot was on the Seattle Seahawks, was the starting quarterback for the Commanders.
Chance is taking every chance he gets.
He's been really impressive. Of course, he had a big preseason game last week against the San Francisco 49ers, and Chance Campbell perhaps pushing for some. We were talking about Jaquan Jackson maybe getting some first-team reps. Chance Campbell certainly earning an opportunity. Somebody doesn't like the fact that I brought up Michael Jackson. I'm very sorry, Texter.
What do y'all have against Michael Jackson?
Well,
man?
You know, the things that happened at the end of his life and whatnot.
Listen, we can do that just about any artists we play on this radio station. So please, let's not go there. Okay, we're just playing music just to play it. I get it. I understand it. But we're playing music just for entertainment purposes. That's all.
I know.
I love Michael Jackson. I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan. And that whole stuff that happened one day, it is what it is. But we play music here for entertainment, not to, you know, we're not playing an individual just because of something that may have happened in their life.
Yes. To put it lightly, a complicated life for
exactly.
Michael Jackson.
Absolutely.
Not to discount what happened at the end of his life, but the music, it speaks for
love
itself.
The music.
Either way. So before the break, we were talking about floor and ceiling for the Tennessee Titans. Our friend Teron Davenport was part of a story on ESPN.com. Win-loss records, ceilings, and floors for all NFL teams in 2024. So each NFL Nation reporter gave their best possible record and worst possible record for the team that they cover. And according to Teron, his ceiling for the Tennessee Titans is 9-8. Thinks the best that this Titans team can probably be this season is 9-8. The floor, according to Teron, is 4-13. So Teron sees best case scenario, probably 9-8. Worst case scenario, 4-13. The biggest X factor, according to Teron, as we all know, offensive line improvement. So think about that. That's a wide range from 9 wins to 4 wins. I think Vegas odds, at least on ESPN Bet, last I checked, were over under for 6.5 wins for the Titans. So that seems to be, you know, around the range. So what has to go right for the Titans to finish 9-8? Or perhaps push further. I mean, I have a hard time imagining this team winning double digit games. I think Teron is right. I feel like 9-8 is the best case scenario. So, actually, let me rephrase this question, because we know what needs to go right for them to go 9-8. Will Levis needs to improve. The offensive line needs to hold up. All of the receivers we were just talking about need to stay healthy. You know, they need, you know, T'Vondre Sweat to flash, all of these things. Let's talk about the worst case scenario. What has to go wrong for the Titans to finish 4-13? Because look, if they're finishing 4-13, one thing I'm pretty confident in saying, Will Levis probably not going to be the starting quarterback next year, because the Titans may draft his replacement at or near the top of the draft next year if they finish 4-13. So worst case scenario, which is not always the best, most entertaining thing to talk about, the most fun thing you want to talk about, but what would have to happen for this team to go 4-13?
A lot.
Yes.
And when I say a lot, I don't mean like literally a lot. A lot to me is if the offensive line doesn't improve, which we think it will, just based upon the acquisitions they have in the changing of the coaches at that position. But if this offensive line doesn't improve, then that's going to be a big problem, because we've seen over the last 2 years, what it looks like with a inept offensive line or depleted offensive line. This team could barely move the ball at times. They had times with really that trouble getting in their offense. They had trouble opening up the offensive playbook because they didn't have enough time to protect for the quarterback. So worst case scenario to me is the offensive line isn't what we believe they should or can be. And then that's a direct effect on the quarterback. That's why I think you got to look at the quarterback position in this situation a little bit different based upon the history. And when I mean history, I mean the last 2 years. We all know that Ryan Tannehill was a good quarterback for this team, but you put him behind an offensive line that couldn't block. He seemed like a below average quarterback a lot of times, and it had nothing to do with him. It's just he didn't have the time to throw the football. And if he was rushing passes, and if he did have time to throw, then the offense, as far as receivers, guys were missing from the lineup here and there. So you only had one guy that was a constant, and that was DeAndre Hopkins. So the offensive line play directly affects what Will Levis can do. I do agree with you that, listen, if they go 4-13, then there's going to be some changes amongst the offense. Now, we can look at it from the standpoint of, you know, if the offensive line isn't what they thought it was, then you may look at the quarterback a little bit different based upon what you're seeing. You know, does he have time to get into his progressions? Did he have time to sit in the pocket? Was he outside the pocket a lot? Was he rushed? A lot of those things causes a quarterback to not perform well. So if we're looking at this team, we're looking at how does the offensive line improve? And if they don't, then this is going to be another season like it was last season and the year before that. And then if the defense, because we're talking about worst-case scenario here, from a defensive standpoint, Awuzie is already injured. If he doesn't come back ready to go, Ladarius Sneed, we know his situation and how they have to manage that. If they still, while managing it, if he still ends up getting, you know, hurt, then that hurts the Tennessee Titans. Even though I do like Brownlee, we got a chance to talk with him yesterday. Really good young man. I want to call him a kid. He could be my son, but a really good young man. And it seems like his priorities and his head is in the right space to become a really good player in this league. But you don't want to have to depend on. We don't have to depend on a young guy to take up some slack if Legere Sneed's not there. I just realized that Callahan is up on the podium right now, so we're going to get over to Brian Callahan over at the Titans practice facility.
It's going to get chippy out there. It's two really highly competitive NFL football players. It's just the way it goes. But it was good to see the restraint. There was back and forth. There was some talking. But at the end of the day, we kind of got out of this 2 days worth of really good work without any real issues or escalation, and that was really good to see. So really proud of our guys, the way they handled themselves. I thought the Seahawks did a great job, too. Again, keeping it competitive, but never crossing the line. So that was good to see.
Some receivers out. How do you think some of the guys behind them did?
From my first feeling of it, pretty good. I think we had some good work. Those guys did some good things. I'll have to watch it more to see if we were on our details, you know, depths and technique and all that stuff. But for the most part, felt pretty good about how those guys performed.
Khaled said yesterday he did not run hard through the two deep balls.
Yeah.
I know Will kind of took the blame on the one throw. That's a bit concerning that a big ticket free agent who's supposed to be setting the tone is not running hard.
No, not really. It wasn't. I wouldn't credit it to not running hard. It just reminds me a little bit, you know, when Jamar Chase came in as a rookie in Cincinnati, there was a bunch of hoopla about how he forgot how to catch a football, and we couldn't hit him deep and we couldn't connect and he can't catch. And I think the same thing happened to Jerry Rice too, if I'm not mistaken. But some of these training camp ups and downs get a little bit magnified. I'm not overly concerned about the process. I think we're in the right place. Sure, I would like to hit one or two of them, but those things come, and I don't really overreact to that at all. I think yesterday was hot. Those guys' legs were dead. They're dead today. We cut practice pretty significantly because of it. So I would just say we're just continuing on as usual.
How disappointed are you that when you hit the offense in a 2-minute team period, it's one play?
Oh. Disappointed. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't what I was hoping to get out of that period. I thought wasn't good execution all the way around, and you know, we throw an interception to what would end a game, and so that's it's good coaching to teach off of, but you know, yeah, very disappointed in that. I was hopeful to get better work out of that with the operation instead of just throwing a pick on the first play, and that's it. So yeah, disappointing.
Do you feel like there's time to work on those things now that the joint practice is behind you, and are you worried that right now that might be what the team is?
Oh no, I don't think that. We got plenty of situational work coming up. We have a whole situational practice coming up as well. So this is just part of the process. Again, would have loved to see us be able to go 5, 6, 7 plays and have a shot at the end zone to win the game in that situation, and we didn't. And so we got to go back and learn from whatever that is that the mistake was. And you can't turn the ball over if you want to have a chance to win the game with a minute left. And so I think that's really all. It's an isolated incident to the practice today, and we'll keep moving forward.
Continues to show up around the football. Can you talk about the improvements that he's made throughout camp, and do you look at maybe giving him more play time higher up on the depth chart?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of bodies in that spot right now, so he'll get plenty of play time. But he's done a really nice job of taking advantage of the opportunity. He's made plays in the game. He keeps continuing to show up in practice, and so that's what you ask of guys that are trying to take hold of an opportunity is that, you know, can you do it multiple days in a row? Can you stack 4 or 5 days, 4 or 5 practices? And continue to play at that level, and so far he has, and that's really good to see. I think, you know, Kwan's kind of in the same boat. He's put together a handful of really nice days, and is can you keep doing that at that level? Is it really who you are as a player? Are you really taking advantage of the opportunity? And so far I think, you know, both of those guys have done that. They're both in similar cases where they're trying to prove themselves and have put together some good tape, and so far so good for them. They've done a nice job.
It's already been asked about this, but JC today going to is today a good example for him of they know who you are and they're going to challenge you?
Yeah, it's great. It's great work. I mean, they got some good players on the front. I think they got some underrated rushers. So it was awesome work for JC to see somebody different than, you know, Arden and Harold. Like, there's other types and styles of rushers out there that he needs to go against, and that part was great. And obviously, and they kick Leonard out to the end. That's a big physical matchup, and that's great film for us to watch and him to evaluate and get better from.
Were you seeing what you want to see from them?
Oh, yeah, I am. So far, they've done a nice job. I think we've been, like, early in this practice, we came out of the gates, and I thought we were excellent running the football in the first period there. But I've seen a lot of really good things. I think they're on track. I think it's good competition with Dylan and Ruppy. But both of those guys have raised their level of play, and I think NPF's done a really nice job at the right side. So we're not a completed work. I mean, there's plenty of days to go here, but the progress has been notable, and I've been pleased with it.
What would you say happened on that interception on that final team period? Was that just you want Levis to get the ball out quicker, or what would you say?
Yeah, I'd have to look at the route. I was watching the protection up front, and when I took my eyes up, the ball but undercut by Witherspoon. So. I don't know what happened with the route. It didn't. Nothing was right with it all the way around, which is why I ended up throwing an interception. So I'd have to watch it to know for sure.
When you have those coaching moments with Will, like, what have you found to be the best way to address whatever the issue is?
Straightforward. You know, we don't really hold back. I mean, we're very honest. Point out what's wrong, what needs to be better, how it can be better. And I think that's the key, is that whenever you're going to point out a mistake, is what's the solution? What are you coaching? You know, are you just criticizing the action, or are you offering a solution to what could be better? And so we criticize and we offer the solution and what we think could have helped that play be better, whether it's footwork, whether it's his eyes, whether it's the route. You know, there's a bunch of things that go into that process, but it's always going to be about being critical and being honest, taking the criticism for what it is, and then offering a solution how it can be better.
How much of a sense do you have of how the defense did? And do you start your review with a debrief from Denard, or do you dive right into the film?
I dive right into the film to watch it. You know, I thought, particularly our first team defensive line did a really nice job yesterday, I thought. But I watch all of it myself, and then I usually convene with him and go through anything that we need to talk about. But, yeah, it's kind of a back and forth, him and I talking about that after I've already watched it, so I at least have some reference onto what went well, what didn't go well. So, but yeah, there was some really good stuff, I think, on all phases of the defense, and there were some things that we got to get better at for sure.
Some of the corners were moved up with people absent. What do you think of what they're doing with the opportunity?
They had a tough task over there, you know. DK is as good a receiver as there is in football. I think Jackson Smith and Jigba is probably one of the better slots as a young player. So they had their hands full. It was a good test for them. And these are guys that we're going to be counting on to have to step in certain spots. Obviously, we don't have Cheeto and Legarius out there. But still, the expectation is when they go out there to play well. And what I mean by play well on top of it is do things right. You know, whatever the technique is, that's like, if you get beat physically, those things happen. Sometimes there's a mismatch. But to do things the right way, the way it's being coached, I think is the most important part of what we're looking to see from those guys that get a chance to elevate and play against better competition.
Second preseason game, a chance for you to get a look at guys that may not be starters, but certainly guys you're going to be counting on.
Yeah.
How much are you looking forward to seeing how they perform there?
Very much so. I love the preseason games personally, because you get a chance to really look at the depth of your team and see what kind of guys you have playing. And again, they're playing against other guys fighting for the same things. And so, you know, you get pretty good competition out there with those groups. And I love watching it. It's great evaluation for us to see what we have in a real live action, because you don't always know what you have out here in the practice field until you see guys go play football for real. And so I'm looking forward to it. There's going to be some guys competing for spots, and our team plays really hard, so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do.
Play the starters at all?
No, our starters won't play. There may be a couple of guys maybe that play, but our starters will not play. Obviously, two really hard, physical, heavy days of work for them. No reason to put them in the game. We got our controlled work here against their ones. Really, that's the benefit of the joint practices, is the amount you get against these guys. It's controlled, But no, our starters, you know, should not expect to see many starters, if any at all.
Know which order you'll go with the quarterbacks?
Malik will start the game. Yeah, Malik will get his chance. He's rotated some with the twos in the last 2 days. He will start the game with that group. He's earned the right to have an opportunity to play with that group, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does.
You guys good?
Thanks, guys.
Thanks much, friend.
That was Tennessee Titans head coach Brian Callahan following practice with the Seahawks. Ended practice a little early. A couple of notes there. The questions mostly were focused on the interception that Will Levis threw on his first pass in the two-minute drill, intercepted by Devin Witherspoon, who, according to reports, ran over to the sideline and handed the ball to Jamal Adams. So... a lot of sniping between Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs and their former teammates. But we'll react to what Brian Callahan had to say there on the other side. Adam Vingan, Derek Mason, ESPN 125, 106.3 The Game.
What do one of the world's top food cities, a nationally celebrated zoo and science museum, and a Condé Nast Traveler Top 10 Best Big City in the Country have in common? Yes, it's Columbus. This isn't just a stop on the map. It's where award-winning flavors, unforgettable family moments, and big city buzz come together. Let's be honest, Columbus is turning heads. For top-of-the-line discoveries in your own backyard, visit experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.